We're holding on page Gimel Amud Aleph, the fifth line. We're in the middle of trying to figure out, in our Mishnah, we had the case where a person expects a grandmother animal, a granddaughter, and so far there's no issue yet because the issue is only parent and child, and then he checks the middle generation, how many malchus he get. Tanakama had said one, and Sunkus in the name of the mayor says two. Tanakama is saying one because the fact is there was only one act of shrita, and there was one hasra, and Sunkus was saying would be Mechayev two because there's two different relationships over there. Over here, it's related to the mother in one direction and to the daughter in the other. So we were in the middle of trying to work out, the Gemara was trying to work out then, does Sunkus say that kind of thing more generally? That any time a person does two times the same issue within one hasra, then he can get twice malchus for it? Or is it only in this case because within the flocking, because we have these different bodies of animals involved over here, namely again that it's related to two different animals in two different ways? We talked about yesterday whether Simchus would also argue in the case of our Mishnah involving two babies and then a mother. Anyway, we're in the middle of figuring out then, what does Simchus hold this more across the board, or only in our case because Gufin was walking? So the Gemara says, Tashmah, let's bring a proof from a Braisa. Oh, we're talking about, again, about Gid Anoshe, as we had one yesterday. Gid Anoshe is going to be the subject of the seventh parak of Om Sefer, so we'll have it in a few days, versus then, the Braisa says, Oh, Shnei Gidim Mishpina. What we said was yesterday, we had a machlokas with Yehuda and the Chachamim about the basic definition of what's also as a Gid Anoshe, where the Chachamim say it's equally also from either five animal, and Rabbi Yehuda says there's only one five that's also in the Torah, and the question is which one. The Gemara discusses later on in that parak, Rabbi Yehuda concludes that it's the right one, that's the one on the right side, but is he learning that from Das Torah? Does he actually have a Torah source for that? Svada tells us that it would be that, and in that case, it really would be a suffix. So, Toshma, a person needs two Gidanoshes from two different thighs and two different animals, meaning, since we're saying two thighs from two different animals, unlike an earlier case that we learned yesterday, where it just said that he ate two Gidanoshes from the same animal, either one was stressing it's from two different animals, then the point is that both of them are right legs. So now, ultimately, this is where the Gemara, Rashi points out, this is where the Gemara is later on going to learn on Daf Tzadik Aleph, that Rabbi Yehuda, when he says that it applies to the right, it's not just a svara, he actually has a solid source for it, and says that we can definitively say that Minat Torah, it's only the right one that a person is fired for, and we're getting malchus. So now a person ate two different right leg given from two different animals. So Sofik Shmonim, then the Tanakama of this Braisa says that he's getting double malchus, 80 malchus, which is to say twice 39. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, in a Sofik Alamem, Rabbi Yehuda says he's only getting 40, he's only getting one set of malchus. Now, again, we have to figure out, Hechi Domi, what is the case? Are we talking about that he first ate from one Gid Anoshe, and before that they gave Masra, don't eat from it if you're going to be chayav malchus, but with shteyas, and then zachas, and then he ate the other one later on, and they gave with shteyas rois, and they gave him a second hasra for that. And my time is Rabbi Yehuda, I'm not going with Tuloy. Well, then why would Rabbi Yehuda be saying that it's only 40 malchus and no more? Obviously, in that case, separate hasrois, there's no question makes for separate malchus. Obviously, we have to be talking about it's eating them with asachas, and as we talked about yesterday, it doesn't necessarily mean literally at the same time, doesn't mean one right after the other, whatever the case. And there's only one asra, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda says that there's only one malchus. Now that we realize that that's the scenario, then we have to figure out, man Tanakama, then who would be the Tanakama of that Braisa who argues with Rabbi Yehuda? Could it be from our Mishnah, the Chacham who disagreed with Sunkus in our Mishnah, and say that in the case of the grandmother, the granddaughter, and then the middle generation, then he's getting only one malchus? Why would they say there that he gets two malchus? Well, malchus and the gufim machlokin, not up in that case of the three animals with different gufim, Haki Rabbanan, The Chum says Pulcher from two Malkus and gets only one. Puffa, like Pulcher, again, how much more is there over here where it's not Gufin Maflokin? Now, of course, they are Gufin Maflokin in the sense that they come from two different animals. But the point is, a couple of Akronim point out that by the Gidan Yosha, given that it is equally possible to be tired from by eating Gidan Yosha from the same animal, then we can't really call it Gufin Maflokin, even if over here it happens to be from two different ones. The same way, for example, as when we talked yesterday about eating Chaleb, we wouldn't call two possessions of Chaleb Gufin Maflokin, even though conceivably the Chaleb could come from two different animals, because it could equally well come from one, as opposed to Osef Espinoy, by definition, involves two animals, and the case of our Mishnah, by definition, involves three. So clearly then, the Rabbanan who hold that in all cases, in our Mishnah, with Gufin Mechlokin, he's getting only one Malchus, are not going to hold by the two Gidanoshas that he's going to be getting two Malchus. Ela Lav Sumfasi. So evidently that Braisa must be according to Sumfus. Well, then that would tell us that Sumfus, in fact, says his din not only when Gufin Mechlokin, like in our Mishnah with Osef Espinoy, but even in other cases, such as Gidanosha. I think one answer is again, not necessarily. In fact, we could say the Braisa is talking about where he ate one after the other, and that he ate one after the other. So that explains why the Tanakhama says two malchus. Uja ta'amit my time in the Rabbi Huda. Well, then you're asking why is Rabbi Huda the five and only one? The reason would have to be that the less they kazayas, the reason would be, the case would be that the Gidan Nosha was not the size of a kazayas. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, like this, in order to be chayit, now there's these two ways of looking at it. When a person eats the Gidan Nosha, how much would he be chayit for? We know, of course, in the Torah, usually, when we say something is also to eat, and a person is chayit for it, whatever he's chayit, is usually going to be a kazayis. Now, we also have a concept called beria, which is sometimes we say something is significant enough on its own that it triggers the issur, and it triggers not so much the issur, it triggers the penalty, even if it's otherwise not a shear. For example, earlier in the Sefer, we talk about the halachas of bugs, what you're allowed and not allowed to eat. So, for example, a person eats a whole bug, even though it's less than a kazayas, then he would be chayav malchus for it, and possibly many malchus, as Mar mentions, in other places, depending on how many different issurim are applicable to this bug. So even though it's far less than a kazayas, it's a barrier, and that's significant. So now, we're going to say that here we're talking about Rashi explains that one of the Gidan Noshes had a kazayas, but the other one was a kazayas in size, but the other one was not. So it doesn't matter which one, first or second. The point is, therefore, so now only one of them was a kazayas, the other one was not. That's how Rashi learns. Rashi also brings an explanation that some want to say it means that there's not a kazayas in one of them, but only in both of them. But Rashi says that doesn't seem to work. How could the two asiyos combine together? On the other hand, there are other Rishonim who learn that it will learn exactly that way, that it means that that neither one by itself is a kazayas, and the two of them combined make up a kazayas. So now, Gitanya, and we don't advise that off like the Ember Kazayas, if a person eats a Gidan Nosha, which is less than a Kazayas in size, Chayav, then he's going to be Chayav Maldus. Chayav less than a Kazayas, doesn't matter, it's called a Beria, it's something significant on its own. It's a Beria literally means a creature, so in other words, it's a creature as is. Gidan Nosha by itself is an object of Isser, and he has a complete object over there, and therefore he's Chayav for eating it, and then he's Chayav Maldus. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm actually a kazayas. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says only if it's a kazayas in size, because he doesn't consider it to be a barrier. He just considers it to be a part of the animal. So that would be the machlokas and the b'raisa then. So the Tanakhama would say that each one, so again, one of them was a kazayas, and the other one was not. Nevertheless, he can still be chayav two malchus for the fact that each one was, that one was a kazayas, and the other one, even though it's smaller than a kazayas, is a barrier. Points of the Rishonim who say that it's talking about, and then the explanation that Rashi rejects, that it means that the two of them combined make up a kazayas. Fine, you don't even need that though. Each one by itself is a barrier. Therefore two malchus. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of this being a barrier, and therefore he says only he'd be chayav only for the one that's a kazayas, or the combination of them making up a kazayas, as the case may be. So therefore, so in that case, this Braisa is not talking about the case where he ate them vasachas. And then it would tell us something about Sumfus's opinion. We can't prove one way or the other. So the bottom line is we don't know whether Sumfus holds his opinion about double malchus only in a case like our Mishnah, where does Gufin Lachlokin, or would he hold it across the board even when that's not a fact? The halacha, anyway, is not like Sumchus. As far as practical halacha, the halacha is not like Sumchus. The halacha is like the halacha is like the Tanakama of the Mishnah, that in this case he'd only be getting one malchus, because from Mechlokin or not, the fact is it was only one shchita and one hasra. Mishnah says, now, you're buying an animal. How did you know that this animal's mother or baby was not shechted that same day that you should be also to shecht it? So our Mishnah is going to deal with a matter related to that. Now the Rishonim discuss now we're going to talk about certain special times of year when you have to be concerned about that, because lots of people buy animals in order to shecht and eat. What about the rest of the year? Do you have to worry about that? So there's a number of different opinions among Rishonim about that. The Rashba and the Ram say that most of the year you don't have to worry about it with flour. Who knows? Maybe this animal's mother is already dead. Maybe it never had a baby in the first place. Were they even sold today? Were they even shechted today? So you have so many safest, one on top of the other. And who knows? Maybe even, somebody bought it, but they didn't necessarily even buy it to sheft. They may have bought it to plow or whatever. So the Rashba and the Ram learn that you don't have to worry about it. You don't even need to ask whether the seller sold the mother or baby that day. Now the Ram does say that maybe the seller would have the responsibility of telling him in order not to be mashal the other person, as in fact Shulchan Aruch fastens accordingly. But what happens if you didn't tell him most of the year? It's not considered a mekach tos. The buyer can't come back and say, wait, you sold me this animal and I assumed I could sheft it. Then I just found out that you sold the other one to Yankel and now I can't sheft mine today. So the Ram explains it won't be considered a mekach tos because the seller can tell most of the year, because the seller can tell him, listen, how did I know you were going to sheft it today? As far as I knew, you were going to sheft it tomorrow. Now this is all according to the Rashba and the Ram. The Ramban has a different understanding of it. He says that even throughout the year, you do need to ask. After all, even as we said, there's all these sfeikas on top of sfeikas. Nevertheless, it's easy enough to find out. So therefore you should ask. All it is that we're going to talk about certain special times of the year when even if you don't ask, then the seller has to volunteer that information. So the Mishnah says, Barbo Prokhan Bashana, there are four different times during the year, Hamurka Behemel Havera, a person sells an animal to somebody else, he has to inform him, Ima Machati Lishfat, Bita Machati Lishfat, he has to inform him, I sold this animal's mother, or I sold this animal's daughter. Because these are times of year when people are going to be buying, people are making sudas these times of year, as we're going to define. So when a person buys an animal, the pashtus, he's buying it to shecht it right away. So now again, according to the Rashba, Rishonim explained that if he doesn't, then it would be considered a mekach tos, and the buyer would be entitled to a refund of his money, because he would say, look, I bought this animal now on one of these days before Yom Tov, as we're going to discuss, when I was expecting to be able to sheft it today, and now I can't, so what did I need this animal for? Take back the animal and give me back my money. Now again, according to the Rashba and the Ram, the vote is most of the year, you don't even have to ask. So in other words, if he didn't ask and the guy didn't volunteer, the rest of the year it won't be considered mekach tos, and now it would. According to the Ramban, the rest of the year you're supposed to ask, then the vote would be that the rest of the year you need to ask, and if you didn't ask, then you don't have any complaints, whereas by these abal prokin, then the seller has to tell you, and if he does, he has to volunteer the information, and if not, that's mekach tos. So what are these 4 days? The first one is the day before the last day of the last Yom Tov of Sukkot, meaning the last day of Yom Tov of Sukkot is Shmini Atzeres. Erev that is Hashana Rabbah. So people celebrate Hashana Rabbah, not Hashana Rabbah, people celebrate Shmini Atzeres, and they eat a lot of meat on it. Rashi explains, because the regel b'fnei atzmo, the Gemara explains in a number of places, that Shmini Atzeres is not just an appendix to Sukkot, it's actually a Yom Tov of its own, and therefore people would be more mesimcha on it, and therefore they would eat more meat on it. The kolboy actually explains the other way around. The cause and effect is kind of the cause and effect. It's kind of the other way around. Because people would, when the Gemara says regular snaps, regular means include at this point that people would make an extra simple. Anyway, the point is that people would shecht a lot of extra animals on it, and therefore a person is chayev to, therefore again, the seller is chayev to volunteer that information, whether the buyer asks or not, according to the different Rishayim. The second one, Ve'erev Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach, the second one is the day before, on Erev Pesach, people are going to be bringing a Korban Pesach. They want to make sure that they have enough meat that they can make the Seder with and be able to eat the Korban Pesach ala Seiva. And even in times when there's no Beis Hamikdash, nevertheless, people still celebrate the beginning of Yom Tov with a lot of meat. Now, as far as Sukkos, Tosfos points out, at the beginning, before Sukkos, people are busy with their putting up their sukkah and getting their lulav and aser, so they don't really have so much time to shecht animals. Before Shmini Atzeres, then they take care to bring a lot of animals as korbanos. Just to shecht a lot of animals. And again, therefore, a person buys an animal, we can assume that he meant to shecht it that day. The third one, the Erev Atzeres, the third one is Erev Shavuos, because again, Shavuos is a special Yom Tov, and we celebrate it, it's Zman Matan Torah, and we celebrate it. And the fourth one, the Erev Rosh Hashanah, and the fourth one is Erev Rosh Hashanah. People would make a big Suda, and L'Kavod Rosh Hashanah, so that there's a simen that they should have a good view. So those 4 days then are days when people are expected that a person is buying an animal, but Pashtus means to shecht it that day, and therefore again, then therefore the seller has to inform him that I already sold the mother or the baby today, and don't buy this animal because you won't be able to shecht it until tomorrow. Now, to be sure, you can shecht on Yom Tov, but people may not want to do that, especially because then you have certain things. You have many different dinim that it discusses in the Sechta Beitza of what you're allowed and not allowed to do with the skin, with the skin of the animal and the fender and the chaylev and so forth, that people may not want to bother with that. And of course, also it takes time to prepare, and they want to have their meat, and they want to be able to have their meal in time. So again, the idea is if the seller doesn't tell them, then it would be a mekach tos. Rabbi Yitzchak Lili also adds that Erev Yom Kippur in the Golil, in the north of Eretz Yisrael, is also a time when people buy an extra large amount of animals and shecht them. Why only in the Golil? Tosfos points out that in the south of Eretz Yisrael, they used to eat on Erev Yom Kippur lighter food. They would eat bird meat such as chicken. They would eat fish. Before fast like that, you don't necessarily want to eat heavy foods like animal meat. Whereas in the Golo, they did things differently. Different other Mephoshim point out different other reasons why there might have been a difference between the south of Eretz Yisrael and the north. One point is it may have been a minute whether they do kaparis or not. An interesting idea brought from the Ma'arit Talgazi is that in Yehuda they did kaparis like we do with chickens, and then they would shech them and eat them l'kavod Erev Yom Kippur. Whereas in the Golo they didn't do kaparis, and therefore instead they used animal meat. Meshach Chochmas has a different point as well. We find in a number of places in Shas that the Romans imposed harsher gzeiros on Yehuda, on the south of Eretz Yisrael, more so than any other place, in particular because back in the day, Yehuda, when Esav tried to fight and prevent them from burying Yaakov in Maros Machpelah, Yehuda killed them, and ever since then, Esav's descendants, including the Romans, have it in for the Jews. So therefore, they didn't want to publicize so much in Yehuda that it's to make a big thing that we're going to have big meals, because then the Goyim are going to realize that tomorrow's in Kippur and they're going to use it as an excuse to harass them. Whereas in the Golo, they had less of a problem with that. Anyway, so according to Rabbi Yitzchak Lili, you have a fifth day as well. So the Mishnah continues. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Eima Sain. Now Rabbi Yehuda says, when does this rule apply that we're saying that you have to inform the person that I sold him, that I already sold the mother or the daughter today? Bizman she'ema revach. When there's no time, we'll explain in a second what revach means in this context. Avol yesh le revach. But if there is revach, if there is time, ein sarach lo'idiyoy, then he doesn't need to inform you. So what do you mean by Reva? Rashi explains if he sold the other one yesterday and the second one he's selling today, then he doesn't have to inform him, because then we can assume that the first buyer already shechted yesterday, and therefore today it's not a problem. So then there's different other explanations. Rabbi Gershom over here says that it means Revach would be, for example, if the second buyer is buying it a couple of days before Yom Tov, then who says he's going to shecht it that day? He may wait till closer to Yom Tov and then shecht it. So that would be another meaning of Revach. The Raivad also agrees with that. Then the Rambam has yet another explanation that Revach means how much time there is in the day. So the Rambam explains that Rabbi Yehuda would say, if you see it's late in the day, the guy's in a hurry to buy, then you can assume he wants to shecht today before Yom Tov starts. Whereas if he's buying it earlier in the day, then not necessarily he may be trying to save it for another day. So the Raivad disagrees with that and says that more like Rabbi Gershom, that it means we're talking about if he sold it to him a couple of days before Yom Tov, then the Rosh also says fakert. If he's in such a hurry to buy at the end of the day, then fakert. It's much more logical that he's probably not going to shecht it, today. In any case, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that under certain circumstances, any sort of idea, you don't need to inform him, because not necessarily is he going to shecht that day. However, Rabbi Yehuda does agree, the murchos, the ein lachosim, that's a bas fakala, that if the seller sold the mother animal to the chosin and the baby animal to the kala, so then shesharach loydia, he does need to inform him, even if he sold it on different days, because obviously they're both going to shecht on the same day, because they're both making it for the same wedding. So the Tavur Shor explains that actually one thing is, now this is the seller can't be expected to know that this is a chosin and kala necessarily, so they would have to inform him, we're a chosin and we're a kala, respectively, when they come to buy. But then in that case, so now the seller, the chosin will come and say, I'm the chosin, I'm Ploini, and later on today, my kala, Ploinis, is going to be coming and buying from you as well. So now the seller is on the alert that when the kala comes, he'll tell her, and vice versa. Because both of them are going to be shechting on one day, and therefore he would have to tell them which animal they can't buy for that purpose. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Another din that applies to those four times a year, or five according to Rabbi Yisrael, barba prokin elu, on these four times a year, mashchitin es atabach bar perfect. We force the shechit to shech the animal, even against his will. Meaning the rest of the year, you wouldn't want to shecht an animal unless you know that you have buyers lined up to buy it. You know, they didn't have refrigeration then. If you shecht the animal and you don't have buyers, you're going to have a huge loss because the meat is going to spoil. But these four times a year, the Chachamim are requiring that if a person bought even a little bit of the meat, as we're going to go on to say, then the shechit, the owner of the animal, is required to shecht it and give that person his portion of meat. So to begin with, we're starting with the assumption, which we'll revisit that in the Gemara. To begin with, we're starting with the assumption that someone comes and gives him a certain amount of money and saying, I want to buy meat from this animal. So now we're going to require him on that day to shecht, even if he doesn't have any other customers for the meat yet. We'll see in the Gemara the exact details. So even if the ox is worth 1,000 dinar, the aimer of the keach, ever dinner, and meanwhile the buyer wants to buy only one dinner's worth of meat from it, nevertheless, we force the owner of the animal to shecht it and give the guy his dinner's worth of meat. Lefichach. Now, because of that, because it means, in other words, the Chachamim are saying, therefore, that in effect, what we're saying is, even though the guy gave only money and there's no Mashiach, nevertheless, it's considered as Kenyan, as we'll see in the Gemara. So it's considered, in effect, that the buyer bought the animal, lefichach, in mess. So therefore, if it dies, mess lekeach, and it dies, then the death is on the buyer, meaning, in other words, that he's going to have to eat the loss. Not the loss of the whole animal, but he's going to have to eat the loss. He's not going to get his meat worth of dinner because the seller can tell him, listen, you know, that dinner of meat belonged to you, or the whole, that dinner of meat belonged to you. The animal died. That's your loss. But the rest of the year, it's not like that. We don't force the guy to shecht. Because he received money, because money itself does not make a kinyan, lefichach in mess, and therefore if the ox dies before they have a chance to shecht it, mess l'moicher, then the death is on the seller, and he's going to be the one who loses the money. And in that case, if the other person had given him a dinner to buy the meat as prepayment for the meat, then the seller will have to refund him the dinner. Okay. So the Gemara says, first of all, Tana, we learn in Braisa, on those 4 days when we're saying that he had that the seller has to inform him that I sold the mother or I sold the baby, if the seller did not inform him, then the buyer can go and shech the animal that he bought. Not a problem, because he can assume that the seller would have told him if in fact he sold the other one. So he doesn't need to worry that maybe the seller or that maybe in fact the seller had sold it and then fell down on the job and failed to tell him. He doesn't need to worry about that. There's an argument among Rishonim. What about if he bought it from a goy? Now the goy obviously is not going to know about Osev Esbinoi. Do you have to be concerned? The Rashba and the Rosh says it's not a problem. The Mishnah had said, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ein Asai B'Cholo. Rabbi Yehuda had drawn a distinction between whether there's Revach or not Revach, according to the different explanations of the Revach that we said. And the Mishnah had gone on to say that Rabbi Yehuda says that if the seller sold the mother to the chasen and the baby to the kala, then he needs to inform them because, of course, they would be expected to shecht on the same day. So the Gemara says, Lomelu L'Misnei Se'ei M'chasen V'es Abbas L'Kala. Why does the Mishnah specifically say that he sold the mother to the chasen and the daughter to the kala? Why not? The Mishnah could have just said more simply that he sold the mother and daughter to a chasen and kala. And the answer is Milsa Agav Urchik Mashmalon, because the Tana with that wants to, by the way, tell us something. The Urach Ara L'Mitrach Dei Chasna Tfeini Dei Kalsa. It's customary that the chosen puts in more effort and more expense into the wedding than the kala does. So therefore, we can assume that the chosen is going to buy the larger animal, the mother, and the kala is going to be buying the smaller animal, the baby. One point is, I mean, the chosen, as the Gemara says, in some places, a man looks for a woman, not the other way around. So therefore, like, he has more of an interest in it. There's also an idea that he doesn't want to live by his shver. The Gemara elsewhere puts down a chosen who lives in his shver's house. So therefore, he wants to be able to have a nice big liberal suda and then go to live with his kala in his house rather than continuing to live with her father. Next, Mishnah had said, we said during these 4 times of year, then we have, if the guy paid the dinner, then we force the owner of the animal to shecht. So the Gemara answers why. The Gemara asks why. The fact is, he didn't do Meshicha, and money by itself does not make a kinyan. So why are we forcing the guy to shecht? So the answer is, So Rav Huna says in the name of Rav, you're talking about where he did do Meshicha. So now he did Meshicha, he now has a part ownership in the animal, and therefore he can be required to shecht. The Gemara says, he ain't a sefer. Yeah, but if that's what it means, if he did Meshicha, then look at the next part. The Mishnah had said the rest of the year is not like that. And because of that, because he didn't make a kinyan, in mess, if the animal dies, mess lamoicher, then the death is on the seller, meaning he's gonna have to refund the other guy's dinner. What do you mean? V'hol moshach. If he did meshicha, then the guy did a full kinyan. If he only gave money, so you could say that then no kinyan was actually accomplished yet, and therefore he doesn't actually own any of the meat, and therefore the death of the animal is just the seller's loss, and he has to refund the dinner. But if you're telling me that Meshicha was done, then he did a kinyan, why would the seller have to refund it? And the answer is Omer Shmuel Bar Yitzchak La'olam Shaloi Moshach. In fact, we're talking about he did not do Meshicha. Okugon Shizika Lo Yaideh Acher. But what we mean is he was mizaka to him the money through somebody else. In fact, there's a couple of acronyms that explain that that's what Rav Huna himself meant. When he said Shemoshach, he didn't mean that he himself did the Meshicha. He meant that somebody else did the Meshicha on his behalf, which is essentially the same thing as Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak is saying over here. So the difference is, in other words, by Rav, Prokem Eilu Deschos Uloi, these 4 times of year, it's a schos because people need meat, and therefore we can assume that he would have wanted to So in other words, about how does he zit the lay idafa? Rashi explains that the seller gives the ox to somebody else, not in the presence of the buyer, and tells this third party, be zoicha in this ox on behalf of Pliny, that he will now own one dinner's worth of meat from it. So Baba Prokin able these four times a year, discuss for him because he needs meat. So we have a rule in halacha zochin la adam shalei b'fanim. So we can create a schus for a person not in his presence. So now it's considered that kinyan that was done not in his presence is effective, and therefore now he's considered the legal owner of one dinar's worth of meat from this animal, and therefore if at that point the animal dies, okay, now it turns out retroactively it wasn't a schus, but that couldn't have been expected. Then he doesn't get back his dinar because then it's considered it's his animal or his 1/1000th of the animal, as the case may be, that died and it's his loss. The shavim is hashana, but the rest of the year, the choyv ulay, it's not a schus for him. It's a detriment for him because why should he have to spend money if he doesn't specifically need him? I mean, he wanted the meat. Fine, he doesn't need meat so much on the other days of the year. So in chavim the adam shalei b'fanav, as we know the rule that you can't create a detriment to somebody not in his presence, and therefore, so now this other person does not become a valid shliach, and therefore the kinyan didn't take effect. So that's the difference then. So that's the difference. So we're talking about that moshach, meaning that the mashiach or whatever form of kinyan was done through a third party, and it's a difference of zochem la'adam shalei b'fanav versus enchav la'adam shalei b'fanav. Okay, that's one answer. Rabbi Elazar omer Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Elazar says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan another answer. Va'avar prokim elu, what it is these four times of year where everybody needs meat. What it means is like this. Now, you have a machloikas in Bav Metzia. When we're saying, we always say throughout Shas that paying money is not enough to create a kinyan, you need some form of kinyan, Mashiach or Agbar or any of a whole bunch of other methods of kinyan. Is that Minat Torah or is that only Midrabban? It's Machlokas in Bav Metzia. Rabbi Yochanan holds Minat Torah, the exchange of money creates a kinyan. Midrabbanan, the Chachamim made a rule because conceivably you might have a case. Imagine, for example, Reuven pays Shimon for a car load of wheat. Shimon has that wheat stored in his attic, let's say. Reuven has paid the money. If we say that now Reuven is considered the owner of that wheat, what if a fire now breaks out in the storehouse? Shimon will have no incentive to save the wheat because they'll say, whatever it says, not my problem, I got my money already. So therefore, instead, when Rabbi Yochanan the Chacham made a takana that you need mashicha or some form of kinyan like that, that way the wheat will be in Reuven's possession, and that way, and they said, so only if Reuven brings it into his possession, then we're going to say that he made a kinyan on it. But if he just paid money and it's still in Shimon's granary, then it's still going to be on Shimon that if he doesn't save it, then he's going to lose his money. He's going to have to reimburse the money to Reuven. So therefore, that'll give Shimon an incentive to save the wheat from burning. So now, where's Rishla? That's according to Rabbi Yechanan. Where's according to Rish Lakish? Minat Torah, money is not enough and you need Mishinka. So Rabbi Elazar omer Rabbi Yechanan, so Rabbi Elazar, in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, being consistent with Rabbi Yechanan's opinion, name of Rabbi Metzia, explains, Ba'avar prokim elu, these four times of year, can midu chachamim divreim al din Torah, then what the chachamim did is they set up, the rule is going to remain according to the rule of the Torah. We're not going to have the special rule that you need mashicha. These four times of year, we're going to leave the din as it is midaraisa, that money creates a kinyan. Namely, Dama Rabbi Yechanan, because Rabbi Yechanan says in Bava Metzia, Dvar Torah Moris Koinis, Minat Torah just giving money creates a kinyan, and it now belongs to the buyer. Why do we say that Mashicha is necessary for the Kenyan? Because if a fire breaks out and the seller will tell him your wheat got burnt in my attic, and since it wasn't mine anymore, then I didn't bother saving it. So therefore, instead we say that there needs to be some form of kinyan, so that way the buyer has it in his possession, and that way if he doesn't, then that gives the seller an incentive to save it, so that the deal will still go through. Now, so what we're saying is, the rest of the year, therefore, you pay an owner of an animal a dinner to buy a piece of meat from this animal. Okay, but you didn't do mashicha yet, and therefore the other guy can say, well, you didn't make a kinyan yet, and therefore I'm not required to shecht for you. But therefore, it also means then, well, no kinyan means if the animal dies, then it's on him. These four times a year, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that what we're saying is we're gonna stick to the original din of the Torah, that money by itself creates a kinyan. Therefore, now when the person gives the dinar for the meat, then he actually becomes the owner of one part of a 1/1000th or whatever it is of the animal. Now, therefore, if the animal dies, so therefore we're going to require owner to sheta, but it also means that if the animal dies without sheta, then the one who paid the dinar is going to lose his dinar because then it's considered he already bought it, and that's that. It's his, and it's his loss. Interesting point that Achronim bring up, or that Akiva Eger brings up, among others, is wait a minute. If the whole idea is this problem of nisu chukitecha ba'aliyah, in our case over here, we're talking about that the buyer is buying only a fraction of a percent of the animal. So anyway, the seller always has an incentive to try to save the animal. Why do we need to make a takana in the first place that we should say that you need meshicha in order to buy the animal? So a lot of different achronim explain that's one of those things called loy plur. Once the chacham make a takana, then we keep it across the board, even when in a particular example it's not really so applicable. On the other hand, Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Shuvas doesn't like that explanation. He says loy plur is not really a good answer in this case, and so he explains that basically what it comes down to is we have to consider how likely is it that there was a kinyan over here. You're going to say, I mean, you have an ox worth 1,000 dinar. Realistically, how likely is it that the seller is actually going to be willing to take the chance on an animal worth 1,000 dinar when he has a customer for only one dinar? And after all, even the lekeach doesn't necessarily want the seller to lose out so much. So no, what it is, in other words, we can assume So on the face of it, most likely we would say that the buyer is not going to insist on having his dinner of meat if it means that the seller is then going to lose the other 999 dinner because he doesn't have any customers. So Moshe goes on to say that fine, if the buyer trusts the seller when the seller tells him, you know what, I can't shecht this animal for you, I have no other customers, I'm not going to make you shecht, I'm not going to make you lose 999 dinar. What we're talking about over here is where he doesn't trust him, and now he can think to himself that, you know what, maybe the guy is just stalling, maybe the prices of meat went up, and therefore he figures he's going to get more money for it or whatever, so the only way would be maybe with a shvua. Now let's say he doesn't want to swear. So now you have this distinction between the four times a year versus the rest of the year. We can tell him that we can say the rest of the year. So the rest of the year we can say you didn't make a kinyan in the first place. You can tell him that the customer are obviously we can say that the guy may be lying. Maybe in fact he has other customers. Maybe not. But after all, then we have the din that we're still concerned that maybe he really does have other customers and he's lying and doesn't want to sell it for some other reason, and therefore maybe since he has enough customers, then he's not going to bother to try to save the animal because he got his money, as opposed to the Albert Prok and Bashana, where we're saying that now the kinyan is done by Mars, so we're telling him we won't believe him without Adim that he doesn't have other customers, because normally he's going to have other customers, and the only other way would be the Shavua, but we're not talking about Shavua over here, and therefore the kinyan is valid. In other words, Moshe is explaining that basically we determine the validity of the kinyan in the first place by can we believe this guy to say that he has no other customers, and therefore that he's going to take a huge loss on it, or do we not believe him? And if we believe him, then we have different dinim. Then we would have different dinim than if not. So we have two explanations of why it is in our mission, the difference between the Abba Prokin and the rest of the year. One, because we're talking about it was Ayudei Acher, it's a question of Zochin or Kovin, Shaboy Gafanov, and the other one is whether that these four times a year, we say that money itself creates the Kenyan, whereas the rest of the year we follow the Takana of the Chachamim that you need Mashiach to create a Kenyan. Okay. The Mishnah says, all this parrot we've been talking about that you can't shech an Osev Espinoy on Yoim Echad on one day. Well, now we have to define what Yoim Echad means. So Yoim Echad, the Omer Osev Espinoy, the Yoim Echad that we talk about, the Din of Osev Espinoy, is, as we usually have in Halacha, Yoim Hodachafa Laila, the day follows the night. So in other words, if let's say you shechted one of the two on Wednesday night, then you can't shecht the other one the whole day during the day on Thursday. You'd have to wait until after Tzitzik Bechavim on Thursday. as a zoo dora Rav Shimon ben Zoima. So Rav Shimon ben Zoima darshin and said, how do we know this? Nemer ma'ase bereishis yemechad v'nemer ba'osav espinoy yemechad. You have the expression yemechad by ma'ase bereishis and also here by osav espinoy. So we have a gzeira shava. Ma yemechad ramah ma'ase bereishis a yemelachafa alayla. And over there, the day follows the night, as it clearly says by the erev by yivoker. So it is by Osav Espinoy, the night follows the day. There was an interesting chaf on that. That's brought from Rav Shlomo Zalman Oyabach. That Rav Yehuda Nebensal points out a case. What if you have, for example, what if you're in different time zones? Let's say, for example, suppose, for example, one of them shechted the one animal by night in Eretz Yisrael, and in America it's still the previous day, then you'd be able to shecht the other one over there if it's not the same day yet. And vice versa. If let's say you shechted one of them by night in America, and it's the next day in Eretz Yisrael, then it would be also true. And once it becomes the next night in Eretz Yisrael, then it would be mutter. So the Gemara says, "Tanan Rabbanan." We learn in a Braisa says, "Zugara Reb Shimon ben Zoima." Reb Shimon ben Zoima explained why we need this Zerusha. I mean, in general, in the Torah, for most purposes in Halacha, we say that the night follows that we say that the day follows the night. So why do we need the special limud by Osav Espinoy? So he explains the fish kula in kula in medaber el b'kodshim, because the context of the pasuk Osav Espinoy is in connection with kodshim. As we learned at the beginning of the parak, you have the pasuk show that the festival is that a newborn animal you can't bring as a peregrine until 7 days have passed since it was born, and then it continues with the dinim of Osav Espinoy, which at the beginning of the parak he said that's how we know that Osav Espinoy also applies to kodshim. And we know over kodshim laila hodachafa yom, by kodshim, unlike all other areas of Torah, day follows the night. As we see, for example, the Torah tells us that there are certain korbanos that can be eaten on the day that they were brought, as well as that following night. So we see that by korbanos, first day, then night. A deeper idea behind it is, in general, we say night comes before day, in the sense that first we have the darkness of the night of Olam Hazeh, and then we transform it into the light of Elikos. Whereas by korbanos, we're starting out with the light of Elikos, and that penetrates even into the following darkness. Anyway, so now Yochel Apsa came. So now you would think that Osav Espinoy, being written in that context in the Torah, maybe should also have the same definition of Yom, that it should be first day and then night. And it would mean, in other words, in our scenario, that if you shechted the first one Wednesday night, then you're allowed to shecht the next of the other one Thursday morning. So now we need Reb Shimon ben Zoima's Jerusha in our Mishnah, Nemakan, Yemechad, Nemah Maisa Bereshis, Yemechad, where it says Yemechad by here and by Maisa Bereshis, Ma Yemechad, Om Maisa Bereshis, Yemechacha Alayla, Ach Yemechad, Om Maisa Bereshis, Yemechacha Alayla, that is the same definition of Yemechad. So no, we don't use the definition of Yemechad, we don't use the definition of Yoim that we do by Kodshin, we use the definition that we do for all other purposes in Halacha, ultimately tracing back to Maisa Bereshis, where you have first the darkness and then the light by the Erev by Yevoker, and so it is here by Osav Espinoy. Rebbe Yomer, Rebbe says, here's another drasha we have from the word Yomer. When we say Yom Echad, it means Yom HaMiyuchad Ton Koroiz. It means on certain special days, you need to announce, you need to inform, like we learned, you need to inform the would-be buyer that I already sold the mother or I already sold the daughter. So from here we learned the din that we learned before. That there are four special times a year. It's a idea that a person sells an animal to somebody else. He has to inform him, I already sold its mother or I already sold its daughter. And we learn that, Rebbe says, from this word Yom Echad. So either Rashi says the word Yom Echad can mean special days, and namely those would be those 4 days or five, according to Rabbi Yossi HaLevi, that you have to inform him. So in other words, the vote would be that we darshan the words lois sishchatu as if it said lois sashchitu, do not allow it to be shechted on these days, namely by informing. The other possibility, Rashi says, is because Yom Echad means a special day. What would be special about it just means that you need to announce. In other words, according to the first explanation in Rashi, we're not only darshing from the word Yom Echad, we're then continuing to darshan lois sishchatu, as though it said lois hashchitu, do not allow that others are going to end up shechting it. Whereas according to the second explanation, we're just saying there's Yom Echad, so there's something, so there's a certain special day, and of necessity, that means that on those days you have to volunteer this information. Had an office of Esther. Now we start the sixth parak of our Masechta. The subject of this parak is the mitzvah of Kisui Adam. The Torah tells us, the Pasuk tells us, the Ish Ish mi beis mi bnei Yisrael, any person from Bnei Yisrael, or min hagir agor b'sarfam, or among the geirim who live among the Jewish people, asher yotzu d'seid chaya, or if asher yachol, who traps or captures any wild animal or any bird that's allowed to be eaten, and he shechs it, v'shofach hazdame, when he spills his blood, so he sohu ba'ofer, he should cover it with dirt. So then that's the mitzvah of Kisui Adam, and that's all Perek is going to discuss the ins and outs of that mitzvah. So the Mishnah starts off, Kisui Adam, noting, but there's a couple of different reasons that the Moneh HaMitzvahs give for it. One of the Chinuch gives a reason, it would be a cruel thing to be eating the meat with the life blood poured out in front of us. So it's one thing, for example, with domestic animals, which are typically gored as korbanos, and as we're going to see now in the Gemara, Kisui Adam doesn't apply to korbanos, then the Torah didn't impose it in general on domestic animals, but wild animals and birds, and yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Kisui Adam noig ba'oretz v'chutz la'aretz. The din of Kisui Adam applies in Eretz Yisrael and outside Eretz Yisrael. B'fnei abayis v'shalo b'fnei abayis. It applies whether the Beis Hamikdash is standing or not. B'chulin avaloi b'mokdashin. However, it applies only to chulin animals, not to kodshin. Now, you don't bring wild animals as korbanos. So Rashi explains, meaning specifically, we're talking about bird korbanos. Chata sa'oif or oilo sa'oif. There's no Kisui Adam for them, as we're going to work out in the Gemara. Now, there's not really much of a chiddush that it applies everywhere in the world, and that it applies even when the Beis Hamikdash is not standing. Rashi explains that since it has to add the detail, the chulin of a loy b'mokdashim, so therefore it gives the whole list, just like we had in the previous parak. We started out with a whole list of when osev espinoi does and doesn't apply, and in subsequent brachim also we're going to have similar things where we're going to have different dinim that's going to give us this list, which ones apply ba'aretz versus b'chutz la'aretz, which ones apply b'fnei abayis and not b'fnei abayis, and so forth. So therefore it gives the whole list over here, even though there's not much of a chiddush in that. The noeg b'chayo v'oif, now it applies only to wild animals and birds, it does not apply to domestic animals, cows, sheep, and goats, but it does apply, the mezumun of she'en mezumun, it applies whether the wild animal or the bird is already available to you. For example, you tamed it, you're raising a tame bird, let's say, for example, a chicken, you have a chicken coop, for example, or let's say, for example, you brought in some deer and are raising them. Nevertheless, the din of Kisui Adam is going to apply to them. The point is, and why do we need to say that? So whether they're mezumen, whether free to pay for you or not. Rashi explains, the point is, the last parak of our Masechta about Shiluach HaKan is going to tell us that there's a difference when it comes to Shiluach HaKan between mezumen and Eina Mezumen. The mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan applies only to Eina Mezumen, not, for example, if you have a chicken coop or a bird's nest in your house, then you don't have a mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan for it. Only if you happen to come across it. So now, therefore, the Mishnah needs to tell us that Kisui Adam is not like that, and it applies whether the animal or the bird was available to you before or not. Tosfos gives a different reason, because since the Pasuk says, Asher Yotzu Tseid Chaya Oyoif, since the Pasuk describes it, that the person traps a wild animal or a bird, then you would think maybe it only applies when he actually traps it, but not if he actually had it available to him before, and therefore the Mishnah needs to tell us otherwise. Why does it mention trapping? We'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Continues the Mishnah. The noyig b'kori. Now, the din of Kisui Adam also applies to a kori, as we learned in the previous parak. We have a couple of different possibilities. What a kori is. Is it a hybrid between a domestic and a wild animal? And in that case, we discussed under what circumstances does halacha consider it a wild animal and require Kisui Adam. The other possibility we said is it's a species of its own, which the Chachamim didn't figure out whether it's considered a chay or a behem. So therefore, so you'd have to do Kisui Adam on the kori because of that suffix. If nature is suffix, because it's a suffix. There's an interesting machlokas we're showing him whether you would make a bracha. On the face of it, you don't make a bracha when you're doing something. You don't make a bracha when you're doing something because of a stuffing. Rabbeinu Yonah nevertheless holds that he would. He says after you were only by a suffix Rabbanon would you not do that? But here it's a suffix Daraisa, and therefore Rabbeinu Yonah holds you would actually make a bracha on it. The Rosh himself disagrees and says that no, you wouldn't make a bracha on it. So and most of the poskim agree with the Rosh on that, and therefore so you do kiss the Adam for a koi, but you don't make a bracha on it. In Shulchan Aruch, it mentions one possibility that a koi may be, that a koi we talked about in the previous parak, one possibility that a koi may be a buffalo, and in that case, then that would be an example of this kind of thing. That if you shecht a buffalo, then you would not then you would not make a bracha on it because of a suffix In Shulchan Aruch, actually, the Mechaber says that the minhag is not to do kisi adam on a buffalo, says the Mechaber, because they consider it to be a species of ox. As opposed to, the Ramah says, some say that maybe it's the shor habar, maybe it's considered a chaya, and therefore better to cover it without a bracha, or the Ramah says another possibility is you could check the bird as well, and then you'll be able to make a bracha on the kisi adam, because the bird is, of course, chaya, and kisi adam is a definitive thing. Now continues the mission of Ein Shok Minos of Yomtiv. However, you cannot shech the koi on Yomtiv because then you wouldn't be able to do kisi adam. And the mission continues, we shechta. And if you did shech it Ein Mechatzin as Damo, then you can't do kisi adam on Yomtiv because it's only a suffix, and you can't be mechalo Yomtiv to do kisi adam. What exactly is the chilul? So that the Gemara talks about in detail in Sefer Beitza. So we talked about it a little bit in the previous parak. You have to pick up dirt to cover it. The dirt or the ashes, you might have ashes, they may be mukta, it may be that they're only considered non-mukta when you're going to be doing kisi adam, where it's definitely required up yalacha, but not over here where it's a suffix. And another point is that if you do kisi adam on a kori, people may think that it is actually definitively a chaya, and they may be it's chaylev. So the Gemara gives there in the dates a couple of reasons why you shouldn't do kisi adam of a kori on yom. So therefore, to begin with, you shouldn't shecht it because you don't want to lose out the opportunity of doing the mitzvah. So the Gemara says, Mukdosh in my time alloy. We said in the mission that kisi adam does not apply to kodshim. Well, why not? As we said, it means specifically we're talking about birds because they're wild animals that are kodshim. Now, Tosfos points out, I mean, he has a very good reason. Later on in the parak, we're going to learn that it applies only when you shecht the animal, only when you shecht the creature. Birds of korbanos, you don't shecht, you do malika. So then that alone should be a reason why not. Tosfos says no, because the whole point is that when we're saying later in the parak that it needs to be a shechita, is because it needs to be mutter to eat in order to be required to do kisi adam. The pasuk, after all, doesn't even mention the word shechita over here, but just says the shofach hasdama. It just says when you have an animal or a bird that can be eaten, the shofach hasdama, you should spill out the blood, the chisohu ba'ofer, and cover it with dirt. So it doesn't even have to be. So in the case of a chatas oif, the shechting it makes it mutter to eat, as we learned in Zvachar, the koyanim eat the chatas oif, even though it's malika and not shechita. So therefore, so that's the equivalent of shechita for it, and therefore it would have required kisi adam, were it not for the Gemara, is going to work out of a here, why not? So, Ilema Mishum de Rabzeira, are you going to say it's because of what Reb Zera says? The Amr Reb Zera, Shechet Tzarech Shiyit an Ofel Amatav Ofel Amayla, that when a person shechts a wild animal or a bird, he has to put loose dirt below and loose dirt above. It has to be, in other words, it can't just be that he shechts on top of hard ground, yeah, there has to be loose dirt around it. Because the Pasuk says, V'shofach Hasdamer, but he's so bet offer. The Pasuk says, he spills out the blood and he covers it in dust. So offer the nema. Now the pasuk doesn't say that he covers it offer, which would just mean dust. El be offer, it says in dust. So that implies, in other words, completely wrapped up in dust. So it has to. There has to be both below and above. There has to be loose. There has to be loose dirt. Now there is a machlokas rishonim whether you have to specifically set aside the dirt, the loose dirt on the bottom. For that purpose, is it that you actually need to prepare it, or is it just that needs to be there? So Tosfos points out that earlier in the Masechta we had a case over there of somebody who would shech birds in flight, and he would prepare the dirt below where the bird is going to be flying, so that he'd be able to do kisi adam afterwards. So Rashi actually explains that it means they would actually literally go and verbally say, this loose dirt in this area is going to be, I'm going to use it for kisi adam wherever the bird happens to fall after I sheft it with my arrow. So according to Rashi, you literally have to designate the dirt for that purpose. As opposed to Tosfos says, no, you don't really need to. You just have to be loose dirt over there. The point is that that person would, that Amorta would check to be in advance before he's going to check the bird over a certain area to make sure that there is loose dirt over there. So it's Machlokas, because we're showing him whether you need to actually put it there or whether it just needs to be there. In any case, so you need dirt below and above. Now, the Hocha, now when here, when it comes to Kodshim, Loy Efshir, you can't do that. Because Heichi Levin, how would you do it? Lasted the live delay. Should you put dirt over there on the Mizbeach and then be Mevatalit and it's going to stay there forever? Can't Kamosif Abinion. By doing that, you're in effect adding to the structure of the Mizbeach. You're adding to the size of the Mizbeach. The whole, the dimensions of the Mizbeach, or the dimensions of the Beis Mikdash in general, will give them to David by the Nevi'im. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Hakob Iksav Yad Hashem Alai Hiskel. Everything, the entire blueprint of the Beis Mikdash, David says, the Shloima, was given to me in writing from the hand of Hashem, who gave me to understand. So you can't just willy-nilly change the size of the Mizbeach by adding extra dirt to it. Tosfos brings a couple of possibilities of what this means. First of all, now we do have, we learned in Zvachim, it's also in the Sefer Midas, that the Mizbeach in the second Beis Mikdash was larger than the first one. So we see that the Mizbeach can be enlarged, but that was based on a limud from a Kosk. Whereas here, you don't have that. Also, Tosfos says another point, when we say Komoisif Abinyan, might mean you're going to add, the Mizbeach is not going to be perfectly square after you add this dirt to it. And one of the basic dinim of the Mizbeach, as we know in Zlachim, is that it has to be perfectly square. The Rashash talks about that maybe it can mean you're going to be adding to the height of a Yisoid or the height of a Soivir, depending on whether we're talking about a Chata Soivir or an Ola Soivir, and those can't be perfectly. So you can't put dirt there and leave it there forever. Loy liftalay, should you not be mevatalit, you can just put dirt over there and not have in mind that it should be bottle. That's the problem. Then in effect, you have a chatzitza. The dirt is going to be a chatzitza between the blood and the mizbeach. The blood has to go directly on the mizbeach. So you can't do kisi adam for a good paragon, and therefore the whole thing doesn't apply. But the Gemara says that's not really a valid reason, because if that was the whole reason, and you need to lamatala efter, lamaila efter, but after all, fine, you can't put the dirt below, because you can put dirt afterwards, after you squirt the blood onto the mizbeach, now there's no problem with chatzitza, so you'll go ahead and do kisi adam, at least you can do the top. Milo tanya, haven't we learned in a braisa, something similar? Reb Yonasan ben Yosef Omer, shochat chayav achat of shochat behema, suppose a person shechted a wild animal, and then on the same spot he shechted a domestic animal, potter melchassas, then he's potter from covering it, because now he can't, because already the blood of the chaya is already covered by the blood of the behema that's on top of it. And again, to put dirt on top would be a chatzit. So on the other hand, behemah v'achak achaya, but if he shefted a behemah first and then a chaya, chayav l'chassas, then he is chayav to do kisri. The blood of the behemah on bottom is a chatzitza between it and the ground. Doesn't matter. You do what you can. You do what you can. You put the dirt on top of this. So we see that it's enough that even though you're supposed to have the dirt below and above, then nevertheless, b'dieved, it'll be okay. Now, you have this opinion of Yonis and Ben Yosef. There is a big machlokas we've shown him whether in fact this is the halacha. Although the Rif and the Rambam don't even bring this halacha. So we've shown him who explain that means that they disagree with him and they give a few different reasons why. Tosfos brings up a point of it here. Why shouldn't we say that, for example, you shechted a chaya and then a behemah? Why shouldn't you have to take away, scrape off as much as you can of the blood of the behemah and then do the kisi adam or the other way around? So we're trying to point out that Yonis and Ben Yosef's opinion we should still be required to do kisi adam, like Tosfos says. You can have to sweep it away, and we have a Mishnah later on that talks about, for example, that if blood of a chaya and blood of a behemoth got mixed together, then you still need to do kisi adam, which evidently disagrees with Rav Yonis and Ben Yosef. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who, on the other hand, On the other hand, the Shura and the Shulchan Aruch do paskim like him, and the Shach points out that maybe with the fact that the Rif and the Rambam didn't bring this halacha, not because they disagree, but because they say it's so potent that you don't even need to mention it. In any case, the point is, Rabbi Yonis and Ben Yosef saying that you can have a case where you can't do the Kisui Adam from the bottom because you have the water of the Behemah over there, and nevertheless, you still have to do the Kisui Adam on top. So the same thing with a bird for it. And granted, you can't do Kisui Adam on the bottom because, like we said, you'd be adding to the structure of the Mizrach. Why don't we say that at least you should do on the top? And the answer is Kidyat Zera. The answer is that the reason would be based on Rav Zera's principle, which we learned most recently in Menachos. The Amr Rav Zera, Kol Roy Bila in Bila Ma'akevesloy. Rav Zera says that you have many times in Halacha where you have something which may be essential to a process, but may not. It depends. Is it something that would have been capable of doing that? So Kol Roy Bila, when it's capable of being mixed in Bila Ma'akevesloy, then not doing the mixing does not matter. We learned in Menachos, we have a mincha consists of flour and oil. A normal mincha consists of flour and oil, and they're supposed to be blended together. But even if you didn't, the mincha is still kosher. However, it has to be that's capable of being blended. The whole chain of roil bila, where it's not capable of being blended, bila ma kevesloy, that bila, that mixing, is going to be ma'active, and the mincha will be possible without it. Namely, we learned over there that a mincha larger than 60 isarim, it's impossible to thoroughly mix the flour and the oil. And therefore, the fact that you don't do that is not. And this principle of Rav Zera comes up in many places in Shas, where we have something that is a particular detail of a procedure that maybe doesn't have to be done, but it has to be capable of being done. So the same way over here then. So when it comes to you shefted a behema and then a chaya or a chaya and then a behema, fine. But you didn't have to do it in that way. You could equally well have shefted the chaya by itself and then done a proper kisui adam on bottom or on top. So therefore, in this particular case, if you did it in such a way where you can't do it on bottom, then you can still do it on the top. But in the case of the kodshin, we're to begin with, it's impossible to do the kisui on the bottom for the reason we said, because you'd be adding that the structure of the Mizbeach, and therefore that's a reason to say that therefore that's not active in the first place, so that prevents the Kisui Adam from even starting at all, and therefore you don't do Kisui Adam in the first place in that case.